Hello and welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of the world's societies. To those who know that political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission here is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interest, to understand why they're doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching and guidance, not law, because it is liberating, it's empowering, and its covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. And before we turn to the first item in the news, I want to thank our listeners for what has become much more robust participation in the show. Yesterday may have been my favorite in terms of caller interaction, but all of the last week has been really outstanding. So I encourage you to call in. It makes the show, I think, much more interesting when it is a dialogue. First item of the news we're going to dispense with rather quickly, but I did want to share my take. A man with two first names, Michael Sam, formerly of the Missouri Tigers, the university that jumped ship from the Big 12 and pleaded with the SEC to take them in, has an undersized pass rusher, is what he's called now. I think he was a defensive lineman, but he's so undersized that now he wants to be drafted as a linebacker. He thought that football fans and team general managers would like to know, or perhaps dying to know, were really interested in his sexual preferences. So he announced that he was a homosexual. Had a press conference to tell the world, I'm a homosexual. Now, I understand that sex is entertaining and that football is a business that generates its audience because it entertains. But does anyone watch a football game for sex? Is there something I'm missing here? How is his peculiarity regarding sexual partners and sexual methods relevant to his value as a player and an entertainer in football? Now, his agent says that he wants the Chargers to pick him because of the way they handled the delusions, he didn't use that term, of Monte Teo. Monte Teo, if you may recall, is a Mormon who went to the Catholic University of Notre Dame, who wallowed in the myth that he needed sympathy because his girlfriend was dying. Of course, that girlfriend was wholly imagined. Methinks that Michael Sam is imagining that people have an interest in his sexuality. I received an email from a really thoughtful listener, someone who I don't think has yet called the program, but whom I've known in terms of sharing news stories for years, probably 7 or 8 years now. In fact, he, if you like this program, you can credit him. If you dislike this program, you can blame him. He is the gentleman that actually got me to begin doing radio broadcasts. He wrote, tonight on the CNN's cable broadcast, as part of their coverage of the unidentified American overseas who is suspected of being a terrorist, whose fate the Obama administration is currently deciding. There is this individual overseas that the Obama administration wants to send a drone and go kill him. He's an American citizen. No due process, no trial. No judge, no jury. They just decide they want to kill him. And they're debating whether or not they should. And, of course, the Obama administration has killed almost 4,000 people with drones, some of which are and have been American citizens. But for some reason, they're just all in a twit whether or not they should go kill this one. Well, as they were airing this show, the spokesperson for the Let's Go Get Them was General James Spider Marks. And he was asked whether drones should be used on American citizens living, say, in Des Moines, Iowa, or Washington, D.C. I mean, if you're going to go off and you're going to kill an American citizen that happens to be living in Pakistan, why not kill one that is living in Des Moines? Wouldn't the American living in Des Moines potentially be a bigger threat to Americans than the one residing in Yemen? So his answer was, why not? Why not send a drone to kill an American citizen in Des Moines? Why not? He went on to explain that the decision to use a drone to eliminate a suspected terrorist is conducted, quote, in a room filled with lawyers, not only operational commanders. So the legalities are observed, he maintained. He went on to ask the CNN anchor whether or not, if he had a chance to stop Timothy McVeigh as he raced towards the federal building in a truck filled with explosives, we should use a drone? Should we use a drone to stop him? The CNN journalist compliantly nodded and said, good example. The moment journalists, this is my commentary to my friend Jim, are stumped by examples like this one to nod compliantly and say, good example, there's no merit to having them. Timothy McVeigh driving a van isn't the criminal. He's not been arrested. He's not been read his rights. No evidence has been gathered. He's not had a trial. There has not been a verdict. There is no sentence. So the moment a room full of lawyers, politicians, and generals decides to kill someone they believe might become a criminal, folks, there is no reason to have a judicial system. Therefore, why have the lawyers in the room? There's no reason to have a constitution. Why have politicians, therefore, determine people's fates? There is no need for a government. Why have operational commanders? There's no need for journalists or taxes to pay for any of these things. There would be no freedom, no expression of free will, no choice, only compliance. The lives they think they might be saving wouldn't even be worth living. Now, since the why not of the general's comments, General James Spider Marks, is inclusive of killing an American citizen without any trial, without any evidence, without anything other than a room full of men think he ought to die, and that therefore excludes all of the protections offered under the U.S. Constitution. So I say, why bother with the lawyers? What are they ruling on if the Constitution is considered meritless? Now, it's chilling to think that the general thought that this would be a good idea. And even more disturbing, that the journalists agreed. It's obvious that the nation's media and its military have collectively lost the ability to exercise good judgment. And therefore, them making decisions over a person's life and death is grotesquely immoral and inappropriate. Why not? Let's kill Americans with drones on American soil. It is interesting that he mentioned Timothy McVeigh. You very seldom hear any general, any politician, any media official mention the name of his partner. His partner with Timothy Nichols. What did Nichols have to do with all of this, you may wonder? Well, you see, the bomb that McVeigh was driving to the World Trade Center, it was manufactured under the recipe that Nichols learned from Ramzi Youssef during their encounters together in the Philippines. Ramzi Youssef, you see, was an expert in building such bombs. Perfect guy to go to. How do we know? Ramzi Youssef is the fellow who designed the bomb that was created to bring down the World Trade Center the first time, where he drove vans filled with the same kind of bomb into the parking lots below the World Trade Center and detonated them. Ramzi Youssef is the fellow that not only conceived the plan for the first World Trade Center bombing, but carried it out. He's the fellow that conceived the plan for the second World Trade Center bombing, which we call 9/11. But they don't want to talk about Mr. Nichols and his role in all of this. Would you stop him? How about Ramzi Youssef? Why not execute justice there? The New York Times is reporting this story. It reads, the Obama administration is engaged in a debate about the extent of a president's power to use lethal force. That, why don't we just call it murder? Yep. That's the only really appropriate term. It is something that is planned in advance, premeditated, killing another individual based upon premeditation, unless it is in self-defense, when you can demonstrate immediate lethal harm to yourself, which cannot be stated in any of these cases, because we're shooting and killing these people, sending missiles at them half a world away. So there are no Americans at risk. There's no American being threatened when we do this. And so lethal force, when it isn't in self-defense, as it never is in any of these cases, is murder. When does the president have the power to murder? The New York Times reports that not only is the Obama administration engaged in the president's ability to murder an American citizen, their issue really is that the president has assumed the ability to murder an American if the American was affiliated with Al-Qaeda, because America lied to Americans, the government lied to the nation in saying that we were at war with Al-Qaeda, not Islam. So it was interpreted that if someone had an affiliation with Al-Qaeda, that they were therefore an enemy combatant, and therefore, because they were an enemy combatant, they could be killed. It was an act of war as opposed to an act of murder. Now, the fact is that Al-Qaeda as an organization has essentially ceased to exist. And it was never significant. It was always insignificant. And most of those who have perpetrated harm against Americans, since that is the only issue that the American president would have, had no allegiance to Al-Qaeda. They never once said, you know, I'm swearing allegiance to Al-Qaeda. They never adopted ideology that was associated with Al-Qaeda. They're just good Muslims. They're fundamentalist Muslims, and that's it. So the whole Al-Qaeda thing has just been a myth, not unlike the myth of fighting the war against terrorism. Terrorism is a tactic. It's not an ideology. There is no organization, there's no nation, there's no group that is called terrorist. It is a way that people who have been either militaristic, political, or religious have deployed to achieve their goals. So it's a tactic. The United States ended the Civil War by taking on terrorist tactics. It was Sherman's March to the Sea that effectively ended the war. He was a terrorist. America, once engaged in the Pacific theater of, in fact, both theaters, Europe and the Pacific in World War II, deployed to an overwhelming extent terrorist tactics. We even leafleted the German cities and said, you know, we're going to make war untenable. We are going to rain down terror from the skies on your cities. And we're going to continue to do so until you're unwilling and to continue to support this war. That's a terrorist tactic. So we did in Japan, so we did in Germany. And so you can't fight a war against a tactic. There can never be a war on terror. And the moment we discuss it in those terms, which is the only way the government seems to be able to discuss it, then you're lashing out at a tactic, which is moronic. You can't prevail if you don't know who is trying to kill you and why, what they believe. The same is true with, of course, identifying these culprits with Al-Qaeda. Now, what changed was monumental, at least from the media's point of view. You see, Al-Qaeda said it does not have any relationship with ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. We've always known that. But now that there's a public declaration disassociating Al-Qaeda from the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, then when the Islamic State in Syria and an Iraq and Syria does something heinous, says something threatening, they are no longer associated with Al-Qaeda, which means the president doesn't have any authority to murder them, according to this absurd perspective on war. And, of course, what's even more troubling here is that there isn't anyone that Americans have killed overseas of the 4,000 people we've murdered with our drones that was threatening another American. That's not the case. They've been threatening elements of their own government. Some of them haven't even ever killed anyone. But yet, we've seen fit to kill them. But it is this announcement by Al-Qaeda that has made it impossible for the president to go off and kill a member of ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And so they're having a conniption fit, trying to say, well, can he or can't he? And, of course, the generals are saying, kill, kill, kill. That's what we do. But can they? Is the president of the United States guilty of committing an act of premeditated murder against an American citizen when he tells the military to go off and murder them? Should we impeach the president? You see, the deliberations on the Obama administration as to whether or not they can kill an American citizen abroad have been, according to the New York Times, accelerated by Al-Qaeda's recent decision to sever its ties with a violent Islamic group in Syria. And if you read what Osama bin Laden wrote, and then what Ayman Zawahiri wrote, they're not severing their ties with the Islamic State of Iraq. They never had any ties with them. They never provided any guidance. They never provided any funding. They never provided any weapons. They never had a relationship with them. The whole thing was always a myth. Never been the case. And Ayman al-Zawahiri made that clear. He just says, we have no relationship whatsoever and are not providing any guidance to the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Never have. In fact, when we raided Osama bin Laden's home and, of course, murdered him, it was became obvious. The documents that were published were designed to discredit Osama bin Laden, but what they did is they discredited the American war against Al-Qaeda. because in all of his internal documents, you see letters going out from him to these organizations saying, you're not associated with me. You're not associated with anything that I'm part of. You're doing your own thing. You're not following any direction from me. And he was universally condemning of them, including the Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula and the Islamic State in Iraq. So we've known for a long time that this whole aligned with Al-Qaeda that permeates every word that a politician utters, every article you read, every pontification from the military is a lie. And it has been for a very long time. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq prior to the American invasion. We have Glenn on the line wanting to speak on drones, which is a subject near and dear to my heart. I'm of the concern, Glenn, and I don't want to steal your thunder here, but that there will be very soon tens of thousands of military drones and police drones that will be deployed in the United States, that many of them will be armed. That will be lied to as to how they're being used, but that all pretense of constitutional protections in our judicial system are going to be waived, and that our government is going to use these drones in horrible ways.
Well, I object to it on a financial basis. It's just more pork barrel politics and bloated bureaucracy. It's going to line the pockets of the manufacturers of the drones and the Hellfire missiles when we already have, in Michael Hastings, a perfect example of something much more efficient. Just plant bombs on their cars, watch them by satellite, wait till they're out in the middle of nowhere, and bop them. This is just a ridiculous waste of money.
Well, I'm of the conclusion.
Oh, come on, that was funny. What are you doing?
Yeah, I know. I'm of the conclusion that when the United States decided that our first response to Osama bin Laden and Al Qaeda was to send $20 million worth of cruise missiles over Pakistan by first calling the Pakistanis and saying, "Oh, by the way, we're overflying your country with 20 cruise missiles. Don't be concerned. We think we have found where bin Laden is, and we're trying to kill him." At which point, the Pakistani government immediately called bin Laden through the Taliban and said, "You may want to get out of Dodge. They're sending a bunch of missiles to kill you." And we squandered $20 million worth of missiles for the express purpose of blowing up some tents and scaring some camels to death. You know, you can't win a war when you exchange $20 million for a camel. It just doesn't work. And the drones are prohibitively expensive. This is true. Most of these top-end drones, they're using really upper-end jet engines. They're made by Boeing and Lockheed. I mean, they're really very expensive pieces of equipment.
Right. They're lining the pockets of these like I say, the military, right. You know, industrial complex, but it's a lot of pork barrel stuff, but the thing is, like, what about collateral damage? I mean, the people they will want to kill are probably, like I said, I don't know if you've ever seen any of these depictions on TV, and like, I remember seeing in Burn Notice, you know, the people chasing someone in a van, yeah, and you know, this military jet flies over and a little missile flies down and blows up a car. How is that? Where exactly? Are they going to do this on the New York Thruway? Or are they going to do it on the 95 in California, the 5 in California, or the 95 on the East Coast? You know, mm-hmm. Where exactly are they going to hit these guys without collateral
right.
damage?
Right.
They're going to drop one in the Holland Tunnel at rush hour? You know, what exactly right. do you think they're going to do?
It is frightening that we have this tool. One of the biggest issues of having drones is it's so lowers the threshold for acting in a murderous way that, you know, the hurdles that you would typically want to go through to decide to invade, for example, Iraq or Afghanistan, are much more significant than the hurdles of let's go send a drone and kill some people in Yemen and Pakistan. And so you're much more prone to use them. And The reality is that when you invade countries and when you bomb people using these kinds of weapons, while you may kill occasionally a bad guy, you do two things that are far worse. One of them is that you, with the collateral damage, you end up manufacturing 100 more enemy who wants to do you in than you kill. It's just the nature of the thing, lesson we never learned, dropping napalm in Vietnam. And the second problem is that if you're willing to relinquish values that have made your country worthy, like due process and the rule of law, and you're willing to play God and to say that that we have the right to decide who lives and who dies, then you lose part of the essence of what could make you moral. And if you lose that, then what is left?
Well, it's just, I can see there's step down. You just, well, what you do, you set the moral precedent with the technology. They've made the drones a showcase for this pattern of decision making. Well, then you step it down to, you step it down to a sniper with a Barrett 50 at 400 yards. Then you step it down to a guillotine at will. So you can go from high tech to low tech once you've got the moral principle in place.
So what's the what would be the difference between sending a drone to kill an American that a group full of politicians, generals, and lawyers in Washington D.C. don't like that's living in Des Moines, Iowa, versus sending the police after this individual and lynching him publicly while denouncing him so that no one else does a similar act?
Yes, but even that's bureaucratic and inefficient. You simply place the decision-making authority into the hands of the Stalin Obama Führer.
Yeah. Your Führer. Yeah. Life and death. You will either capitulate to my way of thinking and believing, or you're considered an enemy of the state, and therefore my room of people will abdicate to my authority, and we will kill you.
You made fun of my mustache. That's it. You're done.
You're done. Yeah.
All right.
It is. Yeah. Thank you, Glenn. It is an extraordinarily sad day when Americans are even having this discussion and can't fathom the fact that to do this, you have to completely ignore the rule of law, that you have to completely discard the U.S. Constitution, that without the Constitution, there ought not be a military. There ought not be a president. There ought not be politicians. There wouldn't be no room for, reason for having lawyers. I mean, the whole thing is a farce. So the very pretext that the Constitution established is undermined by these actions, and it's undermined. Those individuals that are exercising the authority have no legitimate authority. Now, according to some administration lawyers and intelligence officials, this is from the New York Times report, the expulsion of ISIS, not an expulsion. ISIS was never al-Qaeda. But they want to present it as the expulsion of ISIS because they'll say, well, it has a legacy of ISIS, removes the group from the short list of al-Qaeda, quote-unquote, associates that the president has virtually unlimited powers to strike under a law passed days after September 11, 2001. The group has emerged over the past year as a ruthless player in the Syrian civil war and one whose ability to project its power and recruits beyond the immediate battlefield is worrying Western intelligence agencies. Well, here's the truth, and this is the cause and consequence part of the news that very few Americans seem to get. The Islamic State in Iraq, which became the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, came into being because the United States invaded Iraq. Prior to the United States invading Iraq, there were no fundamentalist Islamic terrorist organizations in Iraq. None. Through our invasion, there were terrorist organizations created by both the Sunni and Shia Muslims. And both of them, while Americans were in Iraq, chose to kill Americans and other members of NATO, as opposed to kill one another. But once America left, the Sunni terrorist groups and the Shia terrorist groups, the militias, began to kill one another. Now, that's the reality. If we do not like the fact that the Islamic State in Iraq is now extraordinarily active, extraordinarily destructive, and is gaining power with each day, taking over province after province, city after city, killing with reckless abandon, then we ought to blame ourselves for invading Iraq. They did not exist prior to our invasion of Iraq. We ought to blame General Petraeus, who thought it would be a swell idea to institute the awakening program, and that after we had empowered a Shiite government and given them a brand new army with all sorts of weapons, that to keep the Shiite government from annihilating the Sunnis, that we would arm the Sunnis. That was called the Awakening Program. Well, they're using their arms to kill Shia, not to keep them at bay. We caused this problem. It's our mess. On Monday, more than 20 ISIS recruits, were killed, as you probably know, when a suicide bomb instructor detonated his bomb. There are times, by the way, and this is something that's reported here in this story, there are times when death is a good thing. Them killing themselves because they, with the device, they wish to kill others. You can't help but think, that's a good thing. But it now means that the what is called an unofficial list. Now we're murdering on an unofficial list of government Al-Qaeda affiliates is down to four. So these are the four groups that the U.S. government thinks that the president can say, I want to go kill that person without due process, without judicial system, without getting the permission of a foreign country. We go kill. If you are a member of the Somali-based Al-Shabaab. Now, Al-Shabaab has no connection with Al-Qaeda. Al-Shabaab is means the lads. It is a ruthless gang in Somalia. They primarily exist for the purpose of stealing. They do wrap themselves in Islamic garb, and they talk about that they want to establish an Islamic State, and they use the promise of virgins in paradise for those that go off and kill on their behalf. But for the most part, it's just a criminal gang. It is no more Al-Qaeda in the sense that Osama bin Laden was a fairly sophisticated dude in terms of his planning and record-keeping and communication skills. And Al-Shabaab is just nothing but a group of thugs using children to do their dirty work. The second is that they have listed here was Jabhat al-Nusra. That's the group in Syria that we're supplying arms. They are by far the largest group of combatants of jihadists in Syria, and the second largest being ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And so the two largest are fundamentalist Muslims. And here's the United States saying, we ought to be on the side of the rebels. We ought to be arming the rebels. And yet the by far the largest group of rebels we're saying is an Al-Qaeda affiliate. And then ISIS was part of that group, but now what do you do when the lone survivor of Al-Qaeda says, I ain't got nothing to do with them? Others think that the Islamic State of Iraq can still be targeted because of its long-standing Al-Qaeda ties. Well, and parallel ambitions. Well, parallel ambitions isn't even true. You see, there was only one thing that made Al-Qaeda just ever so slightly different than the mainstream of Islamic terrorist organizations. And that is that most Islamic terrorist organizations are just any potential foe is good enough for us. So if you don't agree with us, we'll kill you and we'll label you un-Islamic to justify our killing of you. Particularly if we're Sunni and you're Shia, then you're viewed by our clerics as an infidel, so we can justify our killing of you. And most of them kill most of their victims in their own country, and most of their victims are Muslims. The thing that Al-Qaeda did that was ever so slightly different is that Al-Qaeda was conceived by the CIA to go kill Russians. And so he kind of made his brand, if you will, by killing atheists. Then he decided that, you know, we successfully killed all the atheists that we needed to kill with American weapons in Afghanistan. So when the atheist Saddam Hussein decided to invade the Islamic Kuwait, Osama bin Laden said, hey, we're perfect. We are the ultimate atheist attack machine. Let us go kill him. And the United States says, no, not you. We want to do it. And so the United States worked that invasion. And as a result of that, bin Laden said, all right, well, I've been successful killing atheists. Why not Americans? And so he turned his animosity towards Americans. And so he was really opposed to any Islamic group that didn't target Americans. So all of these groups, they're all fundamentalist Islam. They're all reading from the same playbook. They're all motivated by the same God and the same wannabe prophet. But the only difference is Osama bin Laden was angry at America. Well, the rest of them just want to go kill wherever the killing is easiest. We'll be back in a moment.